Last week we had our service and we went outside afterwards and we unveiled the sign, and lo and behold, there's a new name on the outside of the building. Spent a lot of time this week going through different brochures and packages and things that had logos on them, and changing them over because we're starting something new, I hope. You see, this series that we're going to do over the next, actually it leads all the way up till the week before Thanksgiving, it's got a lot of names. I nicknamed it Logo Party. You will understand why as we begin to walk through this series. But I found the bulletin cover online. I have to admit, I swiped it because it impressed me. It had the spot to plop your logo into the top of it. And that question, is there something more? Is there's something more to what's going on here? Because I have to be quite honest with you. If we did everything we did last week simply to unveil a sign and change a few logos on a piece of paper, we put an awful lot of work into something that maybe we don't understand what we're doing. You see, what I am hoping that comes out of this is it is time to, here's the word, change. Now, I say that, and I know that that probably sends cold chills up your spine because you're thinking, what on earth are you talking about? Change, what are we going to change? Well, maybe before I tell you what's going to change, maybe I better tell you what's not going to change. Our message will not change. We are here to preach Christ. We are here to preach salvation through the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Will not change. The moment we do that, close the door, we're a social club, we're done. We will preach Jesus. What else is not going to change is sort of our vision. You're like, oh man, really? We still got the picture? You guys know how this works now. We kind of have a vision of how we see people coming from one area and having a relationship with Christ, and they all begin in the same place. They begin in our... Oh, wow. Oh, my heart just broke. They begin in our community. They begin on the outsides of the doors of the church. They begin in the areas around us, our neighbors, the people that check our groceries, the people that do all the other things. They cut our hair, our friends, our family. They are part of our community, not really part of our church. But to get them into the church, we take them from the community to our crowd. Thank you very much. Oh man, y'all are worrying me a little bit here. So we move them into our crowd, and we have this idea that we're just simply going to ask them to come to church. We're not going to try to go out and try to lead them to Christ all in one big swoop. We're not going to go door to door and try to do it that way. We're just going to simply invite people. Come and listen. And then as they begin to listen, they begin to understand. We move them from the crowd to the one we always seem to have trouble remembering the word. From the crowd to the connected. The idea here that we want them to make a genuine connection with Christ. We want them to come to an understanding of who Jesus is and an understanding of what it means to have a relationship with Him. And we want to make sure we lay that foundation as they sit in the crowd and they listen. And then once they understand what that connection is all about, we simply move them that next little step to the committed. See, this has been our vision, and we've been rolling this out over 5 years. And I want you to know, this is not going away. We did not spend 5 years putting this in place just so we can wipe the slate clean. What else is not going to change? Our mission. If you look at the new logo versus the old logo, it's one of the few things that stayed exactly the same. Right at the bottom, it says it very clearly. We want to develop a passion for God. We want to passionately worship Him. We want to passionately study Him. And we want to passionately know Him. We want to have a passionate relationship with God. And then there's the flip side of that coin. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about this next year. We still need to have compassion for people. We need to have compassion for people in the church because none of us are perfect. We need to have compassion for people outside the church because they're lost without Christ. None of that's changing. So now you're probably wondering, what's changing? Well, what I'm hoping is going to be changing, especially over the next 8 weeks, and then we're going to take a little break as we break for the holidays, and then we begin this new sermon series next year. I've already got them backed up together. What I'm hoping is going to change is your understanding of the big picture. You can probably count what we've been doing over the past 5 years as I've been teaching you the what. What it is that we're going to do. What it is going to happen. Now we're going to be a little more practical, and I'm going to teach you the how we're going to go about doing the what. How is it that we are going to move people from our community to our crowd, to the connected, to the committed? How are we going to develop passion? How are we going to develop compassion? How? How am I going to understand this big picture? And the first thing you have to understand is we like labels. We do. We sit at a stoplight and we see that person standing there holding that piece of cardboard and it says homeless or it says in need or it has something written on it. And immediately as we're sitting there at that stoplight, we can write this person's life in a few minutes and we can decide whether or not we think they're valuable or not. We can see two people walking down the street, whether they're both male or female, and they're holding hands. And immediately we have a label we put on them. And we write their story. We can be riding down the road and we see the people in the orange jumpsuits on the side of the highway cleaning up the trash. And we see them and immediately we break out the label and we want to label these people and we write their story. You know the problem with labels? Problems with labels is it don't allow us to see the field. Now you're getting the logo party. We're going to break this logo, this new Parkview logo down piece by piece, and then we're going to put it back together because there is a story that goes with what we want to be, with understanding the big picture. And the first thing you have to understand is they're represented by that nice green swoosh. We have to learn how to see the field. Now, you say, see the field. I don't get it. That's okay. If you don't get what I mean by see the field, you will by the end of the day. And that's okay because Jesus dealt with a lot of people all the time that couldn't see the field. He dealt with a rich young ruler who could not see the field because he was unwilling to pay the cost. He dealt with Simon the Pharisee who could not see the field because he was more interested in seeing how Jesus would react to some woman touching him. He met with teachers of the law who could not see the field because they were busy using a woman to try to trap Jesus. He dealt with Judas Iscariot who could not see the field all because he was trying to figure out how to make this Jesus thing profitable for him. He dealt with the people of Samaria who could not see the field because they were too busy ridiculing a woman whose life had fallen apart. People that couldn't see the field were commonplace in the Bible. And because they were commonplace, Jesus taught a lot of lessons about people that could not see the field. As a matter of fact, this is one of his main themes. Just take a look at these lessons that we're all familiar with. The Good Samaritan. People so busy with religion, the priest and the Levite, they could not see a hurt man laying on the side of the road. The Pharisee and the tax collector, people so obsessed with telling God how great they are that they look down on people. The rich fool. So worried about providing for himself, that me first attitude, he could not fathom putting his blessings to work and helping the kingdom of God. Matthew chapter 25, the parable of the sheep and goats. Jesus points out two entire groups of people, those that could see the field and those that couldn't. And the ones that couldn't were all denoted by the fact that they just could not see people in need. Jesus said a lot about seeing the field. But the story that stands out the most about how Jesus expressed about not being able to see the field is not one that we don't usually put in this area. It's the rich man and Lazarus. If you have your copy of God's Word, start making your way to Luke chapter 16. We're going to be in verses 19 through 28. And I want to just kind of let you know I have an aversion to this story. Because I was about 9 years old, and there was some well-meaning couple. This is, by the way, before there were VCRs, and everybody thought, you know, everybody had a movie you could pop in, and you could go. And some well-meaning couple decided to have an evangelical meeting at their house, and they were going to show a movie at their house. And that's big time, and for when I grew up as a kid. Okay, man, you have a movie. I'm coming to that. And they were well-meaning, but this little 9-year-old boy walked down to this house and they showed this movie about the rich man and Lazarus and about hell. And I want to tell you something. For the life of me, I can't remember what church those people went to. It didn't make an impression on me except for the fact that I was scared to death that I never wanted to go to church because you know what? Those people are all going to hell. Because that's the message I took out of that, because that's what we want to take out of this. Every now and then I will walk in on a well-meaning conversation. I will. And it always starts out the same. People usually start out talking about how bad things are in the world. And they keep talking and they keep talking. And then inevitably somebody will make the statement, well, we need to preach more hellfire and brimstone. And then I'm standing there and I've got the smile on my face thinking, please don't bring me in this conversation. Please don't bring me in this conversation. And inevitably they look at me and say, so what do you think? I'm just like, yeah. And then they remind me, well, Jesus preached about hell. Yes, Jesus did. He absolutely did. But sometimes I don't think we understand what Jesus preached. So this morning, let's take a look at what he really preached. This is what it says in Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 28. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus. Now I want to stop. I'm not getting into a debate as to whether this is a story about a real person or whether this is a parable. Here's my take on it. I don't care. Okay, I don't know whether Jesus is preaching a made-up story or whether this is a real situation that everybody knew. It's irrelevant. And as a matter of fact, if we start going down that tangent, then guess what? We'll miss seeing the field. This is what it says. A beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue because I am in agony and in fire. But Abraham replied, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you is a great chasm that has been set in place so that those who want to go from here to there cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us. He answered, he being the rich man, Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they not also come to this place of torment. Now you're thinking, all right, I don't get it. What does this have to do with seeing the field? Well, to appreciate this story, you have to back up and you have to figure out who Jesus was telling the story to. Because oftentimes we get the idea that Jesus preached stories like this to the people that were in the field. As a matter of fact, all you have to do is back up to verses 14 and 15 and you will be quite surprised as to who Jesus taught this story about hell to. This is who it is. The Pharisees who loved money and heard all of this were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. This story was not preached to the prostitutes, the criminals, homosexuals. This story, the rich man and Lazarus, is preached to a bunch of religious people. As a matter of fact, go ahead and take me up on this challenge. Go look where Jesus preaches about heaven and hell, and the ones that whenever he talks about hell, always the target audience is religion, never the field. And that makes me start wondering, why would Jesus do this? Why would Jesus teach a story like this to religious people? Because we know all about this. I mean, this is the reason we're religious, is because we don't want to go here. So why would Jesus teach this? I think it's because he teaches it to people who think they're unworthy to go there. He teaches this story because he's trying to get our attention, because if you look at it, this story is so simple. It has two characters in it, and the first character was a rich man, and the first thing you need to see is he was rich. Not rich the person. Rich isn't a lot of money. Okay, he was rich. Well, actually, it's not a lot of money. Did you catch real quickly how Jesus defined the rich man? He defined the rich man by he had more than he needed. He had luxury. So that means today, if you have anything above food and shelter and water, then guess what? You have luxury. You have things that are above and beyond your needs, and therefore Jesus would have defined you as rich. He defined this rich man by he dressed nice. Now, nice being that he probably wore a nice robe. This was biblical times, and I don't think he wore a suit and tie, but his clothes were nice, and when people looked at him, that they joined to know that there must be some money there. He was able to go and shop somewhere, and he was able to buy clothes. He had more than one outfit, probably, which would have been very strange for biblical times because most people had very few clothes. He had plenty to eat. Boy, couldn't that define us? If you were here last week, man, we have plenty to eat in this world. Oh my goodness. It just seems like food is everywhere. Go look in your cabinets and your cupboards probably aren't bare. There's food to eat. He was religious. Now, how do I know he was religious? Well, because when he was there in Hades, he cried out, "Father Abraham." You know what that meant, don't you? He was Jewish. He considered himself Abraham's offspring. And he was never supposed to end up where he was supposed to be. I am betting that he is a man that went to the temple on a regular basis. Jesus doesn't put it in his story, but just by the fact that he considers himself a child of Abraham, I'm guaranteeing you he probably gave money to the temple. But there's something else that is indicative of this man. He just couldn't see the field. He just couldn't do it. Now you're thinking maybe I'm judging him a little bit, but I don't have to judge this man because all I have to do is look at the other character in the story. His name was Lazarus. This is one of the few stories that Jesus told where a character actually gets a formal name. And he was probably crippled. I say that because Jesus says he was laid by the gates. Okay, that indicatively means that he was not able to get to the gate himself. So this is probably a man that was hauled there and sat in front of the gates every single day. He was poor. I know he was poor because Jesus labeled him a beggar. And then basically a beggar is somebody that is incapable of working, and so they have to lay out there and they with their little cup or however else they did it in biblical time, and they have to beg people to just give them money to meet their daily needs. He was dirty. How do I know he was dirty? Well, this was the Roman Empire time, and if you lay by a gate in the Roman Empire time and you laid there all day long, then by the end of the day, you were probably pretty disgusting. I mean, this is where horses would come through and dust would settle up and there was busyness going on. And there he was. He just was laid there. He was diseased. It says that he had sores on his body. Don't know what kind of sores they were, but the only comfort he could get was some poor dog came and licked them. That itself sounds very disgusting, but this is the man. And I wonder if we saw this kind of a person laying on the side of the street for us, what kind of label would we give them? What kind of story would we write for these people? You see, because this man, he was also very unnoticed. Now, how do I know he was unnoticed? Well, you have to realize in Jesus' story, he was outside the door every single day. This was his spot. I don't know how he got there in the morning. I don't know if he got how he got home. Maybe he slept there. I don't know. But this was this man's spot. You could count on him. You could set your watch by the fact he would be in that spot every single day. But he was offered nothing. As a matter of fact, not even the crumbs from the rich man's table. How do I know he wasn't offered them? Because it says he longed for them. Now, the last time I checked, you don't long for what you have. You long for what you don't have. So this man, this Lazarus guy, dirty, detestable, poor guy that's sitting there with sores all over his body, and he's just laying there, and the rich man can't even give him part of his trash. Even in death, Lazarus wasn't missed. Did you notice what was missing? There was no funeral. He just ceased being there. just walked out one day and the spot where he had been laying all these years was just empty. Don't know what he did, what they did with his body. He just went somewhere, just unnoticed. Now in the story, the rich man died, just like Lazarus. And I'm sure, unlike Lazarus, the rich man had a really, really nice funeral. I'm betting he was probably buried in a good location, probably a family plot. People probably came from miles around to attend. Maybe some people stood beside the casket and said nice things from him. Maybe some priest got up and talked about how there will be a time when we'll see him with good old Abraham. But that's not the picture Jesus painted. See, there was just something about this man that Jesus said isn't right. And I want you to catch something. Jesus didn't go into a list of sins that this man had committed. He didn't say, well, this man was rich, but he was also an adulterer. He didn't say this man was rich, but he also cheated on his taxes. He didn't say this man was rich, but he just said this man was rich, and he didn't tell any specific sin, but somehow Jesus did point out something that this man was lacking. He just couldn't see the field. He just could not see the field. How do I know? Because right outside of his door was Lazarus. Right outside this man's door was a diseased, poor beggar with sores on his body, and this man didn't have the time of day for him. Don't you find that weird? I mean, to me, you would have at least been able to stop and do something. He didn't ask for a lot. And even when we're here at the end, he still couldn't see the field. Look how bad it got. Hey, Father Abraham, I'm thirsty. He looks up and he sees Lazarus. Can you send Lazarus to hell so he can wait on me? Isn't that what he asked? He said, I'm suffering, so now can you send Lazarus, who doesn't deserve to be where he is anyway, so you send Lazarus down here to dip his fingers in cold water to quench my thirst. He still didn't see Lazarus as a person. He just saw him as somebody to serve him, somebody to wait on him. He still had this opinion of himself. When that didn't work, he made a second request. Hey, Abraham, send Lazarus back down to his life. Wow, I'm sure that idea thrilled Lazarus. Back to the disease, back to the poor, back to the crippled, back to the time when he was unnoticed. Hey, send him back, but send him back so he can preach. But not to everybody. Oh no. Who was requested? Preach to my brothers. Preach to the people like me, because people like me don't deserve to be here. So you need to send him back so that they can be saved, because I don't want to see my family here. Do you see what's missing? He had zero concern for the field. He had zero concern about the rest of the world. He didn't say, will you please send Lazarus back to be a testimony to everybody, only to the people like me. He just couldn't see it. He just didn't get it. He sat here and he said, I'm not supposed to be here, but okay, if I am, Lazarus owes me something. What did Lazarus owe this man? This man had ignored him all of his life. This man couldn't even manage a crumb of bread for him. And now he has the audacity to say, help me? And he just can't see the field. That's tough, isn't it? That makes you give some concern about the way we do church. Do you think we see the field? Honestly. You don't have to answer it out loud. Do we see the field? Or are we just looking for people like us? You see, Jesus had a point in this story, and it was not to teach about going to hell. Jesus had a point in this story, and it was not so that I would have a better understanding of what hell is like so that I would want to be religious and not go there. Jesus' point was real simple. If you are a true follower, seeing the field is easy. If you are following Jesus, seeing the field is easy. Seeing people in need is the easy part. Seeing people that have spiritual needs should be easy. But if you're just kind of a hanger-on, just here for yourself, the field is nothing more than the place where you look to prove how good you are. The field becomes this place where we convince ourselves that I'm okay because I'm not like them. It becomes an us and them, and we begin to label people. And Jesus teaches this very hard lesson because he's given us a little bit of culture shock. And he wants us to know that when we see the field, our view cannot be one that is full of contempt, gossip, or judgment. Because but for the grace of God, there go I. You see, the idea behind Jesus' story was to wake us up. As a matter of fact, Jesus went on in a few stories later to tell us how it is that we are supposed to view the field. Not the way we do it. This is what he says in John chapter 4, verse 35. Don't you, so he's pointing to them, don't you have a saying it is still 4 months until harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for the harvest. Jesus is teaching about this story and these people are gathering around. He said, you know what? You're waiting for something. You're waiting for something more. And Jesus doesn't give them some 5-point outline on how to be a better witness. He doesn't break out the scripture and say, well, let me teach you some path that you can recite to people so that they can become a Christian. All he says is, hey, people, open your eyes and look. Look all around you. Understand the big picture. The field is ripe. I don't know if whether you know this, in the 5 years since I have been here, there have been 3 churches that have started right in our general vicinity. And you know what the funny thing is? All of them have people going to them. So they went from zero to something. So you know what that tells us, right? There are people out there looking for a place to belong. The field is ripe. The field is out there. We just have to figure out how to open our eyes and see the field. We have to figure out how to open our eyes and focus on what Jesus saw when he sees the field. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36 says, when he being Jesus, saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. Because they were helpless and harassed. They were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus saw the field, what did he feel? He felt compassion. I'm going to go on a hunch here. If Jesus was at the stoplight and the man was standing out there with the homeless sign, I got a feeling Jesus wouldn't roll down the window and hand him a buck. Jesus would probably pull over in the nearest parking lot and walk back and sit there and talk with him for a while. But I don't have time for that. I'm busy. I got a feeling that when Jesus saw the people that were broken, that he had time to stop. Because when Jesus looked at this field, he didn't feel contempt. He didn't label them. He just felt compassion for them. He saw them as people harassed and helpless. Now, I want you to get that word. He saw them as people. People. He didn't chunk Peter when the people were walking up the hill there and chunk Peter and say, hey, see that one over there? Let me tell you what they were doing last Saturday night. Hey, see that one over here? Let me tell you what's wrong with their life. He just saw them as people. And he saw them that they were harassed. Now, I have to confess, I am more of a harassor than a harassee. Okay, I tend to pick, okay, in a playful way, not a bad way. I'm not a bully. But I do understand the concept of being harassed, where you just constantly feel like there's nowhere to stop, and you just feel like all the pressure is on you. And Jesus saw these broken people as people that were being bullied and harassed, and they were helpless to do anything about it. When's the last time you saw a person like that? Really? When's the last time you saw a person and felt that was the issue? Jesus saw them as sheep without a shepherd. Now, we beat the shepherd thing to death this year, haven't we? Well, good. We're going to beat it a little bit more. Because Jesus looked out and he saw these people and he said, they are sheep without a shepherd. And I want to bring that to your focus of what that really means. It means that they did not need somebody to give them directions. Now, when I say not directions, they didn't need somebody to come down and teach them how to be a sheep. They were already sheep. They were already there. Nobody has to go to a sheep and teach them how to be a sheep. They kind of just pick it up all on their own. They figure out how to be sheep. They didn't need somebody to come in there and tell them how to be the best sheep possible. They already knew how to be a sheep. They didn't need somebody to tell them what they were doing, what was wrong with their life. They didn't need somebody to look at them and say, well, you know, if you did this, you would be a better sheep. If you did this or that or the other, then you could move up the ranks and somebody would see you as a better sheep than this. They don't need that. Sheep don't need a pecking order. Have you ever noticed that? Sheep are just sheep. They didn't need to be condemned to hell. You know what's the funny thing? Sheep are pretty dumb creatures. But you know what the concept you don't have to teach sheep? Wolf. A sheep sees a wolf, and even a sheep is smart enough to know that ain't a good thing. A sheep sees a wolf and knows eyes, teeth, growling, saliva coming. This is not where I need to be. They understand the concept already of being condemned. That's not the thing that we need to teach them. You see, Jesus said they simply need a shepherd. Ah, this is where that Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd sermon, should be now coming back into your mind, flowing fully in. Yeah, we know what a shepherd looks like. Somebody to come into their life and provide for them. Somebody to come into their life and guide them. Somebody to come into their life and protect them where they wouldn't be harassed and helpless. That's the job that Jesus says, our job. Oh man, I don't know if I like this change or not. You're telling me that's what this is all about? That's the something more. You see, when you begin to start seeing the field, your perspective will change. But here's the first step. Are you willing to look? Are you willing to look out there and see that there is a world out there that is lost and dying? We changed the name of Parkview to Parkview because the view from our front door is the park. Have you ever really watched the people over there? Hey, guess what? There's some over there right now. I can look out the window. They're on the playground. They're lost. They don't have the relationships that they should have. Well, maybe not all lost. Maybe some of them are just having one of those moments. They need to be at the park today. This is not me saying anybody that's not in church today is lost. That's not the point. The point is that if you can consistently run away from God, then God calls that something lost. Remember last week? That's why we picked that sermon to preach that week, because God seeks the lost. He isn't interested in condemning the lost. He's looking for the lost, but He is counting on us to look out and see the field and begin to look for the lost, to light that path for people to come back. That's the something more. That's the secret ingredient to a church. It's a place where the helpless and the harassed can come and not feel like they're going to be condemned because their life is broken, but they can feel like they can receive some help with their brokenness. That's seeing the field. But you have to be willing to look. And it can't be business as usual.